It's 9:37, you're listening to News Radio 620 WTMJ. A reminder, we are going to be carrying the President-elect's address to the nation on the economy coming up in about 20 minutes or so. At least that's what it's scheduled to be. We talked to you yesterday about Scott Walker's decision not to get in line for the stimulus trough. You have big wish lists put out there by Mayor Tom Barrett and by Governor Jim Doyle, and Scott Walker said, no, I'm not going to make any requests for all of this money. And predictably, the line forms a very long line of people who want to bash him. Started off with Lee Holloway from the county board, who's saying, you know, feed me, gimme, 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 gimme. And in today's paper, just about everybody who apparently has an opinion on this is quoted saying this is just, it's just awful that Scott Walker does not want to have his hand out for the federal stimulus money. And the county executive now joins me on the line.
Good morning, Charlie.
Good morning.
Well, there's no doubt that...
bad boy.
Yeah, the tax and spenders want to spend more, and they don't like it when somebody questions it. I said, I just want to do something simple. I want to get this economy going again. I want to put people back to work. And I have the audacity to argue that the money in the hands of the people is better spent than money in the hands of the government.
Okay, but there is... You don't understand what the political culture here is.
Oh, yeah.
That the political culture is that if there's money out there, you might as well grab it. Otherwise, somebody else will.
Well, and it's,
I mean, the money's going to be spent by somebody.
Except the problem with the scenario, the one thing, and who knows? We don't know. My goodness, the bill hasn't even been introduced, let it pass, so it may change 100 times over. But based upon what we see now, the reality is that all too often the federal government has strings attached to any money it gives the state and local government. And in the case of infrastructure, which is at least publicly what the Obama administration is talking about is infrastructure projects, the routine match is an 80-20 split with 20% coming from the local government. Sometimes it's as much as a 50-50 split. But in that case, say we were to apply for some $50 million worth of transportation projects, that means it would cost us $10 million just to get that $50 million in spending. Well, the reality is that we don't have $10 million out there. If we were going to bond for that, it would cost us a whole lot more than just that $10 million over the next 15 years.
So in other words, the free lunch actually comes with a pretty hefty price tag.
It does, and it's even worse if you do what the governor and some other leaders of the state are talking as though it's going to go into balancing their budget and pay for operating funds. That's even worse because all you do there is defer it into the next budget and create an even bigger hole than the hole they have right now, which is pretty big at $5.4 billion.
Now, it's fair to make a distinction between legitimate infrastructure projects, which you can actually legitimately use the term investment, and just using it to pay ongoing ongoing expenditures.
Oh, absolutely. I think if you had to rank in terms of priority, tax cuts, it's infrastructure projects, and then the last and the worst option is to use it for ongoing operating costs because, again, that just creates a hole for the future and prevents state and local governments from fessing up to their failed policies that got them in the deficit in the first place. Infrastructure, and I'm not completely ruled that off the table, an infrastructure project. What I'm worrying about when it comes to that is it doesn't do me any good to get a new road or a bridge or a parkway or something else out there if I've got to pay 20 to 50% of the cost out of the budget where I don't have the money to begin with. If it was 100% and it was for a true legitimate project that isn't some new boondoggle, you know, it isn't for a new light rail line or for some other project that we wouldn't otherwise support, but it's for something that is legitimate, well, then there's no, you know, there's no reason to rule that out. Or if part of the federal stimulus money went into the construction of legitimate road projects or of, say, buses out of the fund that the state hands on the local transit systems where they each year buy buses out of federal money out of that. Again, that, to me, is not an illegitimate use of it.
If
new projects, right, though, and there's the strings attached, which is all too often not always the case, that's where the problem is. New money. So the best example is it's kind of like having somebody got a rich uncle and he gave you $1,000 for a car. You used it for a down payment, then you went out and bought a Maserati. Well, the reality is that would be nice for a month or two until the bill collectors came and repossessed your car because you couldn't make the monthly payments.
What if the federal money doesn't come with a local match? And you pointed out, we don't even know what's in the bill, and it could change 100 times between now and February.
We would certainly look at it on a case-by-case basis for things like that. In our mind, there's certain criteria. No local match is at the forefront because again, there's a reason why our budget is balanced and the state and federal government's not. We made some tough decisions, but it's paid off in the sense that we're not running into troubles. We'd look at that. We'd look at, secondly, something like no long-term commitments. It doesn't force us to do this into the future. One of the big problems, you remember, more than a decade ago, was Bill Clinton put in place funding for 100,000 police officers, yes. But then they phased it out after a series of years, and the local governments were stuck footing the bill for that. You know, long-term commitment, you have to keep doing it. That's another problem. And then, obviously, the no ongoing operator maintenance expenses.
The problem is, though, you have a couple of things going on here. You have this economic panic, you know, some of which is legitimate.
Yeah.
You have this massive bill that's coming. It's going to spend all this money. And traditionally, the politicians and even the pundits don't ask these kinds of tough questions. They don't look ahead. And by the time people go, geez, that didn't actually do what we thought it was going to do, we didn't realize it had these unintended consequences, by that point, it's just too late. The money's gone. You're stuck.
Exactly. Well, and a good example of this, a few years ago, I remember certain congressmen from the Milwaukee area got beat up for raising concerns about Katrina funding. In the end, he was dead on right, even though everybody villainized him at the...
That's exactly what I was thinking about. When Jim Censer, but instead of saying, okay, if after Katrina, everybody wants to pour as much money as possible, he stands up and says, hey, could we at least make sure that there's going to be accountability, there's not going to be fraud? No, we can't ask those questions. We just got to spend the money. And I'm afraid the same thing's going to happen, but at an exponentially larger level now.
Well, there's been no larger outlay of federal money since World War II, and that was when over the period of many years, fought a global war, a true global war that really the whole country was invested in. The only thing that's optimistic about this is, I think the president-elect, and I give him credit for this, has been looking back at history, not just at Ronald Reagan's tax cuts from 81 through 83 and the unprecedented economic growth that materialized after that, but even what happened back in the 60s when John F. Kennedy, before his tragic death, proposed major tax cuts, and then they were finally enacted in 64 after his death. In both cases, we were in recessions on the verge of almost entering in depression-like circumstances. In both cases, dramatic tax cuts not only brought the economy back, they actually increased the amount of revenue that went into the federal government. I give Obama credit for putting in the major tax cut. The problem is,
the rest of the stuff
out there is going to blow the budget for decades to come.
All right, let me get a chance to respond to some of the criticism. And some of it is the same old, you know, Lee Holloway, give us more money, et cetera, and the Democratic state legislators. But you also have a quote in the newspaper this morning from Tim Sheehy, the president of the Metropolitan Milwaukee Association of Commerce, who agreed with you that he prefers tax cuts to this federal project. But he says that standing on principle in opposition to the expansion of federal deficit is one thing, but if Washington opens the spigot, we ought to be there with a bucket.
Yeah, the problem is that you're getting the bucket out, somebody's picking your pocket in the back end, because as I mentioned before, there's hardly a program out there from the federal government, particularly when it comes to infrastructure and transportation, that doesn't have a local match.
Yeah,
so what good is it if we fill the bucket up, if we take, you know, all the money out of our pocket that we don't have to begin with?
Well, also, it is kind of the argument that we're going to hear a lot of, that everybody else is doing it, so we should do it as well. And generally, the everybody else is doing it argument gets us, you know, we should have learned over the years that maybe that's not a good idea. It kind of reminds me of maybe where we were a few years ago, where when we had the banks and the finance companies opening the spigot on all of the subprime loans, and so, you know, the argument was, hey, you know, we ought to be there with a bucket. Let's get these subprime loans. If the credit companies are giving us easy credit, well, then you know what? Let's get all these credit cards. Let's max out. Let's do all those things. Let's invest in all the various bubbles because everybody else is doing it. There's a spigot open. And unfortunately, when you follow the crowd like this on all of these issues, sometimes you wake up with a hangover. Hey, by the way, I shouldn't even do this. I'm probably going to regret doing this, but you know what's going to be fun to watch, Scott?
What's that?
You see there's a new McCain-Feingold bill?
Yeah.
And they're going to propose a bill to ban pork barrel spending.
Yep.
And, of course, we're about to, and even the president-elect is saying he doesn't want to have pork barrel spending, but this stimulus package is basically like...
It's going to get porked up beyond the $10.
Oh, absolutely. This thing is the mother of all pigs. I mean, the mother of all pork, right?
That's exactly right. Well, it's funny because that's a great example. I thought about that when I saw Senators Buchanan-Feingold, where they, for years, everybody talks about how bad federal pork is. You talk about the Bridge to Nowhere. You talk about the rainforest demonstration project in the middle of Iowa, you know, where there's a lot of rainforest. You talk about all these amazing things out there, but nobody ever complains about pork that comes to their area.
Exactly. So what's going to be fun to us, which I said maybe we should have waited for them to do it, watch all of the folks who go, yes, McCain and Feingold, absolutely, this is a good thing that they're going to take a stand against pork barrel spending. This is a good thing. Some of the same people that are going to be embracing this will be the same ones saying, yes, but Scott Walker bad for not wanting pork barrel spending.
Exactly.
So McCain-Feingold, yes, pork is evil. Scott Walker, pork is good, right? I mean, I'm kind of hoping that maybe I should have waited for Ricardo Pimentel to write the editorial ripping you and then praising McCain-Feingold. But now, yeah.
Probably on the same page, even.
Probably in the same breath, yes.
Yeah.
We need to stomp out pork except our pork, which, isn't that how we got into the problem in the first place?
That's exactly right.
All right, thanks for joining me this morning.
Good talking, Charles.
I appreciate it. County Executive Scott Walker. No, you know how it's going to be. McCain-Feingold is going to be bipartisan, and they are working together to disrupt the political establishment. Their target, pork barrel spending, is a pet project so cherished by most lawmakers that they fiercely protect them, even if they are publicly derided. And what is the major argument for pork barrel spending? Well, it's because, well, the government's giving out the money. If I don't get that money, we don't waste the money on unnecessary projects here. Somebody else is going to waste the money on them. And so McCain-Feingold, they're going to ban that. Oh, this is wonderful. Oh, this is great. Oh, this is reform. The same people, though, that are ripping Scott Walker for saying, you know, maybe we shouldn't have these pork barrel projects. Joining me live in the